Since March 2009, the Pharmacy Podcast has been developing content monthly, weekly, and daily for the business of pharmacy. With more than 25 different podcast channels, more than 1 million downloads, and 30-plus participating pharmacists, the Pharmacy Podcast Network is the global leader in podcasting for the pharmacy professional. Find all of our podcast channels by going to pharmacypodcast.com/shows.
This is the ACMA podcast. Career opportunities for pharmacists in the pharmaceutical industry have never been better. Are you interested in breaking into the industry? It can be competitive. You must distinguish yourself. The Accreditation Council for Medical Affairs, or the ACMA, offers the only specialized board certification for healthcare professionals to help prepare them for roles such as medical science liaison, medical director, drug information experts, and more. The Board Certified Medical Affairs Specialists, or BCMAS program, is an online, self-paced program recognized worldwide as the industry standard and has been featured on the Pharmacy Podcast Network, Forbes, ABC News, The Pharmaceutical Executive, and Yahoo Finance. Become a Board Certified Medical Affairs Specialist and build your professional brand. Learn more. Go to medicalaffairsspecialist.org.
Hello, and thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Millennial Pharma Leader Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Pike, and joining me is Brian Ung. Brian actually joined us a few months ago to share his perspectives on getting a PharmD education, the mid-year fellowship application process, and his subsequent role as a health economics and outcomes researcher. Since then, Brian has actually transitioned into a field-based HEOR role, and I, for one, am so excited to learn about this unique function. Brian, thanks for joining us.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for, having me on the podcast and, happy to chat with you again.
Great. So let's go ahead and give everyone a quick recap of your educational journey, what brought you into pharmacy, and then specifically how you got involved in the pharmaceutical industry and chose to pursue that path.
Yeah, sure. So I attended undergrad at UC Santa Barbara, where I majored in pharmacology, and made my way over to pharmacy school to the East Coast, where I attended University of Maryland, Baltimore. And, throughout pharmacy school in undergrad, I had a lot of retail pharmacy experience and I enjoyed it, but, I didn't really know that that was what I wanted to kind of get into. And so, I think what kind of set me up for success and kind of where I got to where I am today was, I was really curious in terms of, I'm getting this PharmD degree. I know what it can do in the hospital. I know what it can do in the community. Pharmacy setting, what else can I do with it? And so I was very active in kind of just seeking out what I could do with my degree, whether that was research, bench, or kind of the social science research, or, what I ended up doing more health services, health economics research. I attended a lot of roundtable events where there were talks to professionals. So I really did a lot to kind of just put myself out there and learn. So that included, doing research with professors, doing internships, applying to a bunch of those, trying to pick unique rotations and unique electives. If I could kind of give people advice in terms of, how to get to, a role like I have or a different one in industry, it's really just be curious. And so I think my curiosity opened up a lot of doors. I like to say that, some of the best learning I did in pharmacy school actually occurred outside of the classroom, mm-hmm. And kind of helped me get where I am today. And so, it was a mixture of those things that really led me to, where I am today, specifically a managed care, AMCP managed care internship was really influential, mm-hmm. A pharmacoeconomic elective at my school, as well as a rotation that extended my fourth year. So I think it was a combination of those things that really pushed me into this, HEOR market access type of role.
Very cool. And for those who don't know, kind of what is this domain of health economics and outcomes research? What are you studying? What are you trying to measure?
Yeah, sure. So health economics, it's a health economics and outcomes research is the field of what I like to say is a value assessment or value communication of a product. Mm-hmm. So value is kind of a broad term, right? Really, depending on kind of your perspective, you may have a different perception of what is value. And so what I like to think about, what we do in health economics is really generate evidence around a drug that exists outside of a clinical trial. So that could be patient surveys, physician surveys. That could be information looking at costs or adherence, persistence. Again, things that you don't see in a randomized controlled trial.
Right.
And so in my work, it's very, in terms of the knowledge you have for a pharmacist, I finished my background. So after pharmacy school, I did a 2-year health economics fellowship with Celgene and Rutgers. Mm-hmm. And in addition to my day-to-day at Celgene, I got a master's of science in health outcomes policy economics through Rutgers School of Public Health. So nice. I would say, on a day-to-day basis, I really rely on some of those foundational epidemiology and introductory to biostats coursework that I got in my additional degree. Mm-hmm. But it is a combination of those things as well as my clinical background and communication skills that, really kind of give me the tools I can be successful at my job.
Yeah. It's a very, very unique field. It's an interesting path, and that's really cool to hear about. So you've transitioned.
Yeah, I was really, sorry, go ahead, Jeff.
So you've transitioned into this field-based role, and I've heard several different kinds of terms for this, including like health outcomes liaison and value or access manager. Can you kind of describe some of the terminology that's used there?
Yeah, sure. So like I mentioned, health economics outcomes research is the, we're generating evidence to demonstrate the value of our product. So people in my role that are field-based, my role is called, field HEOR, but other people may call it health outcomes liaison, value liaison. There's different terms, but essentially what we do is similar to MSL role in that we're in the field and we're presenting to different audiences, whether it be, in our case, payers, health insurance plans, integrated delivery networks, people who make population health decisions. Mm-hmm. We're presenting the health economics data that our in-house team, a job I previously had, was generating. And so communicating that could be, in terms of PowerPoint decks, PDF tools, some Excel-based tools, could be sharing publications. And again, just communicating and, answering questions about the study and, demonstrating how, our story about our value of the product is relevant to the stakeholder.
Gotcha. So you're kind of communicating with the external folks like payers and managed care organizations. How do you collaborate with other functional areas to achieve that?
So we work really closely with our market access colleagues. People called account managers. Those are usually the point people of connection with the customer. Mm-hmm. And so they'll bring us in when a request is needed, some more information that leads to, that could be answered with health economic information. So we'll get the request for them. We'll work really closely with our medical science liaisons to present the whole picture, right? First the clinical and then the health economics picture. Mm-hmm. And then we work really closely with our in-house team, because they're creating the tools and training us, but also feeding our insights back to the in-house team, so they can develop better research and kind of understand the outside perspective.
Oh, I see. So you have a whole team there that'll present some of the information about a new medicine that's come onto the market and kind of what the value add is from the payer perspective in terms of why they should put that and keep that on the formulary.
Definitely. So we're talking to them, before a drug launches, we'd be telling them about kind of the unmet need, the disease burden, some kind of disease level information. After a drug's been on the market, we may present some real world data, so from insurance claims or electronic medical records, right? As we have even more data, we may have additional data sets we look into. Could be more patient or physician information. So it really depends on kind of where the product is in the life cycle and how a payer is managing that class.
Oh, that's neat. So you were an HEOR manager before, and then you've decided to pursue this field-based role. What other directions could you have considered advancing, and ultimately, what were the decisions that are the options that you were looking at that ultimately made you choose this field-based direction?
Yeah, I was very happy in my current role, so I definitely could have stayed in that role, I did 2 years as a fellowship and then 1 year in that role, and I think I've definitely could have done that for a couple more. You know, I could have sought, so I was U.S. health economics. I could have sought a global health economics role where you're more looking at access from the perspective of countries outside of the U.S. I could have, you know, looked for a role similar to mine, but, you know, working for a managed care organization where I may be using my own internal data to help inform business decisions. I could have done something in kind of the nonprofit world. So working with government agencies, like the NIH or, you know, other organizations like ICER or PCORI. Also I could have done, you know, some people in the past, I think it's a little too much for me, but, you know, went into like a PhD program and become, you know, faculty. So those were definitely some routes. And, you know, the last route or the last, or I guess a couple more routes. So, you know, obviously going into medical devices, not just pharmaceuticals. I could have also done something in the digital health realm, whether it be wearables or apps, you know, kind of doing the same in-house health economics role. And then, you know, the other choices are, you know, what I end up choosing, right, which is this field-based role where I'm, you know, not really doing as much research. I'm still doing a little bit on the job, but that's not my main focus. It's going to be communication. And so for me, it was a mixture of, you know, I wanted to get back to California. I'd been away for a few years, and so I felt like this was the right timing.
Right.
And this is an opportunity where I could stay with the company, but still kind of progress and you know, get a shot at kind of this role. And so I think it was a mixture of, you know, personal and just kind of right fit, right time. And bigger companies, they may have already had someone, you know, in this role and it may be tougher to get. So, you know, I was just fortunate to be in the right spot.
And you said that they allow you to still stay plugged in somewhat with the research going on. So is that?
Yeah. And that was important to me to, you know, continue to refine my skills as a researcher and, you know, just kind of understand, you know, the different nuances of that job.
Right. So is everyone who is working as a field HUR liaison or health outcomes liaison, are they all doctoral degrees or terminal degrees, or what other sorts of educational backgrounds do you come across?
Yeah, so definitely come across people with PharmDs, PhDs, like you said, doctorates. There's also people with Master's of Public Health degrees and PH. You may have people that just have MBAs. But those are usually the most common type degrees, or maybe like a master's of science type degree, but usually at least the master's type level.
Very cool. All right, we're going to shift gears here and take a couple of audience questions. I reached out on LinkedIn, let people know that I would be talking to a field HEOR person. And so I'll go ahead and kick off. Soham Shukla wants to know, what are some milestones you've set up for yourself? As in, what do you expect to achieve on your first day in the role, the first week, the first month?
Yeah, that's a very good question. So, you know, I think for myself, day one, some things I really wanted to kind of button up and get in order is just be organized, right? Be organized in terms of collecting information about the job, you know, in terms of my onboarding, my learning about my customers, learning about people I'm going to work with. So, you know, I've been setting up time to talk with my individual teammates, you know, even getting the nitty gritty with like, how do you guys take notes? Right. You know, cause we're seeing the same customer, you know, maybe a couple times a year. How are we, you know, kind of keeping track of the history? So it's talking to people on my team about kind of, you know, how, what best practices, you know, there are. It's talking to some of my mentors and other team members who have had previous field experience and asking them, you know, what made them successful? What did they wish they did? So it's really just gathering information so I can have somewhat of a game plan and, you know, method of, again, just organizing, you know, kind of my habits. Because again, it's going to be a different role, right? I'm more traveling, working from home than I am in the home office. And then, you know, the next coming month, it's again, just gaining that confidence with the people I work with, that they're bringing me into their customer visits more often. That I'm being more effective in my presentation skills, my communication skills. And then, you know, I think more of a long-term goal for this role is to see how we can expand the scope of it, right? So instead of just doing, or I mean, in addition to presenting and generating research, what other things can we do? You know, are there other people we can collaborate with or communicate with? Is it, you know, patient advocacy groups or, you know, other, you know, organizations like ICER out there, you know, who can we kind of collaborate with? Was it, whether it be like economic key opinion leaders? So those are some of the long-term thoughts that I kind of have about this role.
I like that. I like how you talk about on your first day, really getting up to speed with your teammates and leaning on them, because, you know, everybody kind of starts off in a role and wants to avoid burdening the team and avoid looking like the newbie. But I think that's a good point that on the front end, it really helps to lean on them a little bit, learn, get up to speed with how you're interacting with different clients and some of the best practices that are going on, because that'll make sure that you are kind of where you need to be in the first few months and aren't leaning on them so much down the road.
Definitely.
Great. All right. So our second audience question, Aaron Zagadilov wants to know, as a PharmD, how do you use your clinical degree in HEOR? As an HEOR professional, she says she gets this question all the time.
Very good question. So, yeah, you know, when I think clinical degree, I don't think clinical in terms of like, you know, pharmacology or, you know, drug facts, physiology facts, that I can just rattle off at the top of my head. Mm-hmm. You know, some of that stuff is helpful, right? Like knowing, you know, which medications are used to treat which adverse events. That's really helpful, yeah, occasionally to kind of know off the top of your head. If it comes up in a meeting, but it, usually you're not in that kind of an emergent setting where you kind of need to tap into your knowledge. But, you know, I think the clinical is being able to understand the medical literature, understand where to find it, mm-hmm. right? Understand, you know, clinical practice guidelines, the rationale behind them, understanding a little bit about how the evidence, maybe clinical trials or what have you, is generated, right? How to do literature searches, and also, you know, how to learn a disease state, right? In pharmacy school, we do such a great job at kind of rapid cycling through all these different diseases and treatments. And, you know, in a job like I have, where previously I was mainly focusing on a couple of disease states in my in-house role,
right.
And now in the field role, I'm responsible for, you know, the whole gamut of my company's portfolio. And so, you know, I'm now forced to learn additional disease states, right? And so I think that's a great utilization of my clinical skills,
right,
and my clinical degree. But, and lastly, I think it's also the communication skills that's really accompanying the clinical degree, because, you know, you may have the clinical knowledge, but if you can't communicate that effectively to others, whether it be patients, you know, other healthcare professionals, then, you know, really that knowledge isn't being fully utilized. And so, you know, I think those communication skills and also translating, you know, very complicated medical or, you know, biostatistic concepts in a more simpler terms, you know, it takes a level of knowledge. And I think that's, you know, attributed to my clinical skills and my clinical degree. So I think it's some of those other kind of soft communication skills and how to learn that I really lean on my clinical degree.
Right.
So some of the immediate knowledge, you know, not so much, but, you know, I think in reviewing material, it comes back pretty quickly.
Mm, yeah. Translating those scientific concepts into simple terms, not always so simple, is it?
Yeah,
that's good. So thank you, Soham and Aaron, for your questions. If you ever want to be featured and have your audience questions in the next podcast episode, just follow me on linkedin.com/in/JeffPikeJR, and I will post ahead of time. So Brian, what sorts of technical expertise do you find useful for your job?
Yeah, certainly understanding the limitations and strengths of a database or, you know, our research methods and where we collected data. That's definitely helpful. So epidemiology, that's definitely helpful. Knowledge about statistics. So, you know, it's again, being able to explain why we use a certain methodology over another.
Mm-hmm.
So those are very technical skills that I think I learn on, that I lean on. You know, other skills obviously are more softer and kind of presentation and relationship building as well.
Yeah, neat. And what sorts of software have you had to use, maybe not in your current role, but as a HEOR manager in general? What sorts of programs?
Yeah, you know, I'm a little far removed from like the coding of any of that data. So like programs like SAS and R I learned how to do in school, but that wasn't a main part of my job. Mm-hmm. So, you know, most of my work, you know, it's Microsoft Office Suite. So, you know, obviously a lot of Excel, PowerPoint, Word, that sort of thing. Obviously a lot of email and whatnot. But yeah, that's what I would say is the main majority of kind of the programs that I use.
Yeah. Neat.
Yep.
And I guess a lot of that is just understanding the methodology of the sorts of studies that and scientific data that you're communicating to those payers, and in case they want to know why did you do it this certain way, you can kind of think on your feet and explain that process.
Yeah, you know, communication, whether it be verbal or written, you know, is a really big part of this job. As much as it is a numbers thing, mm-hmm. it's again understanding how to explain the story behind the numbers, right? Give it some life, give it some background, some meaning. And so definitely, you know, some medical writing skills are helpful, you know, whether it be writing myself or proofreading, you know, someone I'm working with, those are helpful as well too.
Absolutely. So what kinds of opportunities are there to move up from a field HUR role? Is there a certain sort of track that most people tend to follow?
You know, industry, everyone's route's different, right? But yeah, there's, I think, you know, there are a lot of different possibilities, you know, all the ones I mentioned earlier about the in-house role. So again, global devices or apps can do that with, and certainly now having the field and the in-house experience, they could bring a little bit more to the table. Mm-hmm. So certainly all of those are on the table. And if I wanted to go in-house, perhaps, you know, it would be a possibility for me to go into more of a senior role, right? Where again, I have both those perspectives from the in-house and field. So yeah, you know, I think I'm still weighing those options. Still want to definitely get, you know, give this job a good shot and see how it goes.
Very neat. So Brian, what are some of your future aspirations? It could be work related or outside of work. What are you excited about for California? What do you want to achieve there?
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to, watch my Lakers at a decent hour. it's a little chilly here watching it at 10:30, but yeah, no, I really hope to, again, with my career, you know, I'm not one of those people who has like a, you know, big 5 or 10 year plan, but I just like to kind of develop my craft, you know, again, be curious and see what else I could do without, with my, you know, kind of skill set and knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd love to eventually get some healthcare policy experience. I think, you know, our healthcare system needs so much change, and it'd be kind of cool to touch that in some sort of way, whether it be from pharma or maybe something like FDA. So keeping those options open as well. You know, personally, yeah, I'm engaged. So looking forward to moving with my fiance to California and starting life with her. Certainly that's exciting.
Oh, absolutely.
And yeah, thanks. And then, you know, as you know, Jeff, you started this company Pharma Leap, where we're aiming to educate, guide and provide mentorship to pharmacy students and pharmacists that are interested in, again, learning how to apply their training, PharmD training, in the pharmaceutical industry. So, you know, going to see how that goes. And, you know, that's going to be a nice little side hobby, but that's what I have going on so far.
Well, that sounds like a great program you're launching. And where can people go to online to find out more about that?
Yeah, so that's pharmaleap.com. You know, also have an Instagram and LinkedIn page. Yeah, we're, you know, excited to kind of do some more exciting things with your group, Jeff. And, you know, we again hope to kind of just put some information out there that doesn't exist and kind of help people if they're interested.
Oh, that's great stuff. Well, Brian, thanks for joining us. Do you have any parting words of advice for would-be millennial pharma leaders, who are, especially those who are interested in learning more about health economics and outcomes research?
Yeah, definitely. Just be curious. You know, there's a lot of good resources out there. ISPOR, ISPOR is really good, AMCP. But really, yeah, just be curious. You know, seek out opportunities. Read as much as you can, whether it be the news, you know, textbooks. You know, ask questions of people, but yeah, just be curious and, you know, kind of, your career is in your hands. So, you know, take intentional steps to where you want to be.
That's great stuff. All right, Brian, good luck on, your travels out to California, and, I hope things go well for you there.
Thanks, Jeff. Looking forward to catching up at a future conference.
Sure thing.
We thank you for listening to the ACMA podcast, part of the Pharmacy Podcast Network. To learn more about medical affairs and new career opportunities, please go to acmapodcast.com.
Thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. If you enjoy the leading podcast network dedicated to the business and profession of pharmacy, please write us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know which channel is your favorite. And remember, the pharmacist is the hub of healthcare.